Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Got another dude!
Hey! What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Dudes to the right, dudes to the left, stuck in the middle with you.
Got another dude!
Heisman Trophy. Bronco Nagurski Award. Ultimate dudes.
Got another dude.
O-line you, bunch of dudes.
Lot of dudes.
Yeah! Another dude in the house.
Welcome to the Lot of Dudes podcast, presented by 4th and Dude, Season 2, Week 6. It was more like Daz Mitzvah on Saturday, as the Eagles took Temple to church en route to their fourth win of the season. BC opened up the playbook like presents on Christmas morning, hanging 45 points on one of the top defenses in the country. But the competition steps it up a notch this weekend, as Big Bad Dave Dorn and the Wolfpack mark the start of a 7-game stretch with 5 opponents ranked in the top 28. On today's episode, we'll recap the big win over the Owls, let you in on an A.J. Dillon injury update directly from our official sources, and give you an NC State preview from the only podcasters that will be there live in Raleigh on Saturday.
Matt, I tell you what, I didn't expect religion to come into the intro here, but I loved it. That was.
Do you get it? Because Temple?
Yeah, I think that immediately goes into my Hall of Fame. I'll tell you what, you know, a win is a win. Saturday was not pretty by any means. And I think I said last week that I'd be very disappointed if this was not by a few touchdowns, but at the end of the day, we got out of there with the win. There are still some major concerns for me on all sides of the ball. And the injury bug finally showed up, which obviously is unfortunate. But all that matters, 4-1 right now, on to next week.
Exactly. You take a step back, and we're 4-1 going into the meat of our schedule. And it's not ideal. It's not 5-0. But I think we'd all take 4-1, you know, given all the variables that we've seen.
1-0 conference, not the best, too.
Maybe not the best Boston College football that we all were hoping to see based on all the offseason hype. But it's a new season starting on Saturday, and it's time for the boys to get going here as the schedule heats up.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, again, we'll just dive right into it. It was such an ugly win. You know, a 10-point win over a MAC school that, you know, lost to Villanova early in the year.
AC school. They're an AC school, Matt.
Sorry. I feel like that's worse than the MAC. I don't know.
Yeah, it's probably about the same.
You can make an argument either way. But, you know, the first note I have here that I think we just need to hit on is special teams cannot figure it out for the life of them. There was a lot of attention, again, in the BC universe over the past week, a couple of Hypes articles, you know, just about what the root of the issue is. But, you know, at the end of the day, whatever is behind all of it, we had a fumble on the kick return, a dropped punt when we were trying to punt it, missed extra point. Just absolutely brutal. I don't know what the answer is here.
Of those three, it seems like, A, we fixed the kicking game, right? I love Joe Tessitore. He's a great ambassador for Boston College. His kid is in his own head right now. He should not be out there kicking. This Longman kid sounds like he is going to take the reins as long as Colton's Lichtenberg's on the bench. So it sounds like that's fixed. I know he only had, you know, one field goal and a few extra points, but they all looked like money, Matt. So I'm thinking that problem is solved right there. The punts, I agree with you. This Grant Carlson guy just can't catch the ball. It almost and it seemed like it was very suspicious. I wouldn't put it past him that he had money on the game, just given the timing and the spread. You factor
all those
in.
It's a big statement, all right.
And you, yeah. I mean, I'm only 50% serious about that, but and maybe 75. But you look at the replay, and it's like that guy did that on purpose.
No, he has the yips worse than I think Chuck Knoblauch ever had the yips. It's like absolutely incredible. Like again, it's you talk about being in your own head. He catches the ball, and I think he just panics and has flashbacks to every time he's, you know, had a blocked punt or a drop punt. It is, And maybe that's the thing. Maybe like these high level football schools invest in the right sports psychiatrists to like talk through the mental side of it. And we just don't have that because there's really no excuse for a kid who I assume, you know, has been a punter his whole, you know, adult football career, is recruited to be a punter and just gets to this next level and forgets how to even catch the ball.
It's unbelievable. But I don't think psychiatry is the – well, he's millennials. Who knows, Matt? But the third thing you brought up is Mikey Walker. That's officially a concern, and it sucks because he's so electric when he can't hold on to the ball that we need him out there. I don't think we have a better alternative. Maybe Jeff Smith, but I don't think we want to go that direction. Maybe Glines, but when he can't hold on to the ball, he's such a difference maker. So I don't think you pull him. I don't think you Belichick him yet and cut him from the team. So
no,
hopefully he figures it out.
And the hit that jarred the ball loose, to be fair, was like a pretty, you know, clean hit. It's
right. That's,
you know,
a good point.
It wasn't like he completely dropped it. Only other things I want to note on special teams, you know, again, I think a big one is that Tessitore, you know, with the new redshirt rules, like we kind of have had this 4-game window to figure this out. So if he doesn't play the rest of the year, that's kind of, I don't think, no skin off anyone's back. But I will add, I had a note here. Missed extra points have officially become my Inception totem from the movie Inception with Leonardo DiCaprio. It's the one thing that tells me I'm not dreaming when it comes to Boston College football. The losses are just kind of everything kind of blend together. The wins kind of blend together. When I see a missed extra point, I know, okay, whatever I'm seeing, this is reality. It has become a comfort. And we're used to this now for 10 years, pretty much. I mean, at least since the Duke Middle Schmittle. I don't think it's going away anytime soon, regardless of who we put in there.
Oh, it's a tradition. It's a Boston College tradition. Unlike any other, a lot of teams out there just make the extra points, but you know, you come to BC to persevere through that adversity, I guess. I don't know, Matt. That's a funny comment there you made.
Thanks, with the inception reference. Matt. Appreciate
that was good. Enjoyed that one. I do want to touch on the offense real quick, and I sort of gave a little innuendo in the intro, but we put 45 points on what's considered to be coming into that game. You know, one of the better defenses in the country. We touched on it last week. They shut out Maryland, held Maryland to 0 points. Pretty impressive, right? Maryland was a pretty good offense coming into that game. Who knows? But it's a Big Ten school that they shut out. If we can hang 45 points on them, I think that's pretty good. A lot of people were upset with the play calling, and I'd love to get your opinion on this because usually I'm on an island by myself on these. It seems like everyone just is sick and tired of, I don't know if it's the run first approach or if it's somehow piling on from the conservative play calling from last year, which is no longer in existence. You know, you look at the Philly special play, you look at we went for it on 4th and 15. I think that people that may not be all that knowledgeable about football are writing all these articles, and more on that to come. It is my
opinion. I'm sure there will be.
Yeah. but it seems like the consensus is that people are sick of the play calling from Das, and it's predictable. We run on first down. Yeah, guys, we have AJ Dillon. I mean, what do we want to do here? I don't know. I'd love to get your thoughts. I think that we're going to be a run first team. We have a good line on paper, and our highest outputs, by the way, points wise, come when we're run heavy. When we have, you know, when we're running more than 60% of the time, that's when we have our highest scoring games.
Well, I'll say, I mean, I don't, maybe it's a credit to our actual offensive units for making it look this way, but it was, I'd say, honestly, a pretty boring 45 points. Not that that's a bad thing. 45 points is still 45 points, but you know, when you look at like the Wake game, and maybe it's just because there were more big plays and more explosive plays, this was much more methodical. So, you know, it is the conservative style compared to what we saw with Wake and compared to what we saw really for the back half of the schedule last year. But if it puts up numbers, it's hard to complain about. If anything, the only negative note I had was using the Philly special, which, by the way, I think is a really, and I'm a little biased, but I think it's just a stupid name for a play. Like, what is, I don't get it, and I've felt this way for a while. Why is this like just a special thing for Philly? Yeah, they obviously did it with the most success, but it's just a bad name. At least make it like a pun, something Philadelphia. I'm getting off on a tangent here, but I think if anything, the criticism would be, you know, opening up your playbook that much when you're playing Temple. You know what I mean? A team that you could just wear down. So I don't have a problem with the conservative approach, especially in a game, you know, like this.
Well,
at the end of the day, it's 45 points. That's, the offense looked fine. You know what? It looked fine, and it looked fine for the opponent. And I think we take it and we move on.
Yeah, but I mean, it was still a run first approach. I don't think we showed him the
entire playbook.
No, it was absolutely
conservative. Yeah,
and just going into the X and O's a little bit. One of the biggest concerns going into this game, or really all season, has been the offensive line play or lack thereof.
Mm-hmm.
I thought those guys looked a lot better, particularly in the pass protection. They were still getting some penetration on us in the run game. Dylan was getting hit in the backfield, was still taking care of business. I mean, that guy's just an animal. But, you know, on a lot of our touchdowns, Brown was back there. He had all day to throw. He's still having a couple accuracy issues, it seems like. That Tommy Sweeney touchdown was almost very much not a touchdown. But I don't know. It seems like overall I thought the line played a lot better. In particular, that it was they called the run on third and seven, the one that sprung Dylan for 52 yards at the end of the first half. The line got to the second level, and all you need is, you know, once you get there, give Dylan less than two guys to make miss, and he's gone every time. So a couple plays like that, the line really jumped out at me. There was, you know, there's still some issues, right, you know, in there. But again, it's a Temple defense that was, you know, one of the NCAA leaders in sacks. And it's a pretty solid unit. You know, they returned a lot of guys from last year, et cetera, et cetera. It's not, you know, the level of competition they're going to be facing going forward, but it's a step in the right direction from a pretty poor offensive line play against the likes of Purdue and Wake Forest.
Yeah, I think that's a fair takeaway. Again, obviously a lot more time. The question is, you know, is Purdue good because of the four teams they played, or I'm sorry, is Temple good because of the four teams they played, or is there actually something to it? Again, remains to be seen, but at the end of the day, it looked good for what we needed it to look. Only two notes I have on the offense here. You know, AB, it's a really bad habit, it seems like, the way he looks down receivers. It's just like every single play, and once you kind of notice that he does it, it is every single play. He snaps it, and he stares in the same direction, and then he throws it. And that's when mistakes happen. When he has to read through progressions, whether it's just good coverage or whatever it might be, he finds guys that are wide open every time. So that to me seems like a fundamental issue that could easily be fixed. Obviously, Leffler, you know, is a quarterback whisperer. We all know he worked with Tom Brady at Michigan. So I hope that someone is in his ear about this, what seems like a bad habit and seems like should be an easy fix. But obviously,
well, you know how you fix it, Matt? It seems like he's a better player when he's forced outside the pocket. He had an outstanding play. I think it was early in the third quarter. It's like a third and five or something. I don't know. But he escaped the pocket. Two guys were right in his kitchen because no one blocked him. And he avoids a pretty big hit, steps out of it, you know, dekes the other guy, and then, you know, goes on the run and throws a 20-yard strike downfield to the tight end. So when you're dealing with that, you're not looking down your receivers.
Well, there it is, right? Better, yeah, things break
he's
down.
Almost better in like a backyard football type of environment. You know, roll him out, get him into space, do what you got to do. But you're right, he's not your typical stand in the pocket, you know, look a guy off and you know, that type of QB. So we got to play to his strengths.
Right, and then, again, the other thing on the offense, AJ, I feel like, and we'll touch on the injury in a little bit, but got back to being AJ with that powerful north-south running. He wasn't trying to just only bounce to the outside. Yeah, he was doing some off tackles to get him outside and get him space, but for the most part, he was taking on contact. He obviously had that awesome double stiff arm play, which was great, and another long touchdown. So great to see overall. Segues into the injury bug finally hitting the BC locker room, like we alluded to a little bit earlier. The big three, AJ, Jeff Smith, and Kobe White. White at least returned and looked okay. AJ was getting taped up and walking around the sidelines, and I thought he looked good, and I kind of would have hoped he was going to come in when the game got tight. I think it got down to like 3 points at one point, and I was expecting to see him come back in. And then Jeff Smith, haven't heard anything on. No updates from Daz on any of these three, so it's very bad if any of them are serious, if they have missed any time at all. Our offense, you know, for the most part, seems to go as they go, along with the line and AB.
Yeah, those are three of maybe the top five guys or so that you really can't lose, especially, you know, White and Smith together. Those are your top two guys. And by the way, Mikey Walker got his head taken off over the middle. That was absurd.
Yeah, a couple big hits. So that's something to keep an eye on. I think they were held out of practice today, but obviously that doesn't mean anything, you know, for Saturday necessarily. Could just be getting the guys a couple extra pieces of rest.
I've heard a lot of, and I brought up our insider sources who has given us zero information. That was just to kind of draw you guys in.
Oh, it's great. I was sitting on the edge of my seat here, I'll be honest.
Well, I have some non-inside information, but we follow AJ on a lot of social media, and he seems to be acting like a guy that will be not sitting out of a game on Saturday. So we don't read too much into that. He hasn't shot us any DMs or anything like that. But, you know, if you believe social media, I have a feeling he'll be in there. Obviously, we need him, goes without saying. Love Ben Glimes, but AJ's our guy back there, obviously. But that probably covers the offense. And here's where we get into kind of the bad news, right? So I don't know what's happening to our defense. We're a completely different unit than we were last year. We just have no presence up the middle. And it seems like every run up the middle is getting, I don't know, 5-7 yards with regularity. And I don't know who to put the blame on here. If it's, you know, the defensive tackles, if it's the middle linebackers, but either way, they got to figure out some type of change to what they're doing, because that's really it. I think.
Well, it seems like. I mean, to me, it seems like a tackling issue, especially if you look at the, whatever it was, an 80-yard touchdown run the guy had. He got hit by like five guys.
Dennis went with, basically,
he just tried to swing at him with his forearm, and he broke through it. And we kind of, you know, had the same thing against Purdue, obviously, too, which, you know, was a terrible call, as we all know. But still, one of those guys just wraps him up, and that play is stopped for 5 yards, and we move on.
Right. Yeah, I don't know, it's not really a BC thing to want to get the big hit every time. That's a weird thing that they don't have the fundamentals. I'm with you. That's obviously, and it what happens is it, you know, results in these explosive plays. We saw it with Purdue and Rondale Moore. Oh, that was kind of a one-off, but you know, runs like that can change the game. And you know, fortunately, the good news is our secondary, in my opinion, I thought they played pretty well, considering they lost Dennis, obviously.
Right.
I think we got exposed a little bit. Maybe we have a weak link back there. But I think you got to give it to Temple's receivers. They made some outstanding catches. They were very, very difficult to defend. And our guys were all over them in a lot of cases, but they were making really good plays down the field. Obviously, they had our D-backs had two enormous interceptions.
Hamp Cheevers at it again.
Hamp, of course. And the Taj Mahal, which I just came up with.
Yeah,
I just came up with that, Matt. Yeah, not bad.
How do we miss that?
Yeah. game-changing, really probably game-saving interceptions in the second quarter there that sort of shifted the momentum completely. So I think the headline is the D-backs continue to be solid. I think the linebackers as a unit got to start figuring it out. And the D-line outside of Zach Allen, who was one of the best games I've seen anyone play.
He's living up to the hype of this year and then some. It's really fun to watch. And you know, I want to touch on Landry in a little bit, because in Eagles in the Wild, he obviously had himself a big weekend, but kind of the hype that we expected him to have last year. And then obviously, you know, he was riddled by injuries, but Zach Allen is delivering on that hype and then some. I think Todd McShay came out with this top
30.
Oh, sorry, nope. Spoiler alert. All right, yep. I won't get into that just yet.
Well, I'll give it to you. Yeah, that's my dude. Zach Allen is absolutely shooting up the draft. What was his stat line on Saturday? It was ridiculous. It was a couple sacks, bunch of swatted balls, like 18 tackles for a
lot of pressure. It was, yeah, he leads the ACC in pressure. I know that.
Yeah, and it wasn't even, you know, making tackles every time, but he was in that quarterback. I mean, they had to move over a tight end to you know, double cover Allen. So it looks like he's in midseason form. If he can keep that going, he can be a huge X factor.
And I agree. So I think there's enough bright spots on the defense that there's something to be positive about. Again, we mentioned the secondary, and then, you know, some of the guys on the you know, front side of things in general. And this is kind of how I felt after Wake too. It's hard to just say ignore the fluky scores, because the fluky scores happened and they continue to happen, which is concerning. But Temple had a couple fluky scores. They had that 80-yard touchdown on a missed tackle. They had the fumble return on the kickoff. They got the ball at a very short field on the punt. You know, if we take out these mistakes, which is really what they are, and we take, you know, 15, 20 points off the board, we're feeling a lot better about this team if we won this game, you know, 45-20. Similar if, you know, we beat Wake 45-20. So
we got some breaks too, though, right? I mean, those picks. Yeah. What else happened? I don't know. But I think picks
are more situational than, you know, hey, Mike, just hang on to the football, right? And that's a free 7 points off the board. So, you know, I think that...
Oh, Zach Allen forced that fumble off the edge. That was the other one.
Right. But again, we're forcing these mistakes rather than dropping punts. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I guess it's just these are things that we can tighten up, I would hope. And, you know, that's the sort of thing that if we want to break it to the next level, we need to put together clean game plans to beat Clemson, to beat... Vatek, right?
So I don't have the stats on this, but we were extremely clean the second half of last year, and it's a big reason why we were so explosive and had the margins of victories that we
penalties
had.
Turnovers, all of it. So we just can't get away from that. It killed us in Purdue, and I think that will be our downfall if we have a downfall that's at any point this year.
The other thing too, to give the defense some credit, we ran another 100 plays, right? So that's what's going to happen when you're playing that type of football. You give Temple 80 plays at, you know, by default, because you're running so many. You're scoring, what's 45 divided by 7? You're scoring 9, what's the math, 9 times? I don't know, whatever.
No.
You're kicking up, no, is that wrong? Nine times seven? 60. That's
it's
way
certainly
off.
Not. Yes.
I'm not an accountant or anything.
It's a little more than six. yeah, just under six.
No, but that's all just right. The byproduct. You don't see, you know, the Big 12 people getting on Oklahoma State or whoever's good in the Big 12 right now. You know, West Virginia for giving up 40 points or 30 points when they score 50, right? So right. I think people, you know, sort of don't understand everything about football. That's what I'm going forward with.
Interesting.
With,
okay.
with my optimistic, you know, look on the season so far, which I know I'm on an island here and I know it's, you know, slightly delusional, but these guys will, I think, will pick it up when the competition picks up. And I don't think a 10-point win at Temple, while it was ugly at times and in question at certain points, is anything to freak out about at this point.
Well, yeah, I'm with you. A win's a win. We got out of there. Yeah, it wasn't pretty, but again, a win's a win. Let's move on to the segments here. You had your first dude. Do you have any others in the dude category or only negatives left?
Yeah, I actually touched on both of these already, Matt. Shoot. But my dude is that Zach Allen is officially number 13 on Todd McShay's latest big board in the mock draft published just minutes ago.
Yep.
So defensive end, you lives on. And you really think about all the guys that are stepping up this year. We have like 10 NFL players. Like this is BC, and maybe that's why people are so pissed, because we should be way better. We have so many good players on this team. They're going to be playing on Sundays. It's pretty cool. So that's my dude. What do you got?
I have two quick ones. So first is koozies. So fourth and dude, as many of you saw on Twitter, finally got into the merchandising game. Just an absolute huge hit. Got a big box of koozies delivered, passed some of them out at Dewey's, sent some down to our good friend, former QB1, Patty Ice, Patrick Tolles. We got the dude alert, the throwback Daz face on the front, the throwback BC logo on the back. Just absolutely fire stuff. We'll be bringing a ton down to NC State. So he sees at Raleigh.
It's 2018. I assume we can get these online. Our fans can get these online. Do we have a distribution strategy?
No, we don't, Matt. We're not selling these just yet because I don't think we have the logistics to do so. So
yeah, you throw them on the line and it takes care of itself.
On the line?
Yeah, you just put them on the line. Okay. You're good to go.
Yeah, no.
People are clamoring for them.
We have not gotten there yet.
Maybe that's what you're going for, is you want to, you know, kind of exclusivity. You got
right, exactly.
Yeah, right, I got gotcha. You.
Right,
gotcha.
And then, you know, people, you know, and then they get on eBay on the secondary market, and that's when we attack. So,
right.
Cool with me. My second one here is fluffing attendance numbers. So the attendance for the Temple game was announced.
What's fluffing?
Like you're making them larger than what they normally are.
Is that the right word?
You're fluffing them up, yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, all right. You said to use it fair? In a sentence. All right, got it.
Sorry. Fluffing up of the attendance numbers. So it was announced on Saturday of a little over 40,000 people, which equates to 91% of the stadium. I only watched it on TV. I was not there. But I, from what I saw, it was nowhere even in the neighborhood of that number. I don't know your thoughts on it. I like that do it because it makes us look good in the box score and in the ACC standings. Of, yeah, we're filling 92% of the stadium against a, you know, MAC school. But, yeah, I think, and you're an accountant, you should appreciate this. I think someone is running some numbers falsely there.
You think there's a fraud situation going on?
There might be. Yeah, you might have to make a trip up to Chestnut Hill.
Got it. Hey, someone's got to do it. I was watching on my phone, full disclosure. I was up in Vermont this weekend at a little brewfest situation, you know, conflicted with the game. I did rewatch the game, so I know what I'm talking about. I had it recorded and all that, so before you guys get on me for that. But talk about a terrifying game, by the way, to just watch on your phone thinking, oh, this will be over in the first half. Nope, it's not. Temple's
going to
take the lead. We're going to have 17 turnovers. But anyway, no, it did look empty, Matt. I would agree. That's a dude or a poot for you?
Well, it's a dude because I think it's good that we're building up.
It's a poot for me because of the fraud, I think.
Sure. Very, very good point. All right, what else do you have on the negative side?
All right, my poot, and I hate that this is becoming a weekly thing where I pick on, you know, a millennial from the Heights this week that had a hit piece. Someone posted an article saying something about even in victories, Coach Addazio managed to still F things up. And you can say that like, hey, he hasn't figured out, you know, his defense stinks or, you know, special teams. I guess he touched on a little bit, but his main thesis was the offensive game plan, which again, we already talked about this ad nauseum. I don't want to keep talking about it, but we scored 45 points on a really good defense. That doesn't matter. Just that's not the right time to post that article. Maybe he wrote it a couple weeks ago and it just got published today. But his whole thesis was that, oh, well, I was watching the the Los Angeles Rams play on Thursday Night Football, and I noticed that their offense is a lot better than our offense. And it's like, huh, Yeah, so our offense is not the best defense in the NFL for the past 2 years. Got it. I don't know, Matt. We're a running football team. That's what we do. Maybe people think we should be running this Philly special play, you know, every other down. I don't know what it is. People aren't entertained by this brand of football. Big offensive linemen, you know, AJ Dillon, stiff arm people. I don't get it. Maybe go root for a team again in the Big 12 or another conference where they don't play defense. But I'm sick and tired of people hating on this offense, because we continue to put up huge numbers, but it's not pretty or whatever it is. It's not, you know, an innovative way to play football.
Yeah,
it's BC, and that's what we do. It's the same thing with Wisconsin. It works for them. I don't know.
I'll be honest. I did not expect at the start of the season to develop a feud 5 games in with basically the entire Heights editorial board. It's been, two weeks in a row now. This is a trend that I only see continuing, and it kind of came out of nowhere, but I guess I'm all for it. You know, we have to be the optimistic voice out there. Someone's got to do it. So I appreciate you taking on that fight.
No, you can't put up 45 points on Temple then say our offense is boring.
I agree. I will say for
these
both
millennials,
of the
they want instant gratification when they want passing.
You realize you're a millennial, right? But whatever.
I don't identify as okay. That. No.
Right, fair. So I'll move on to mine. Two relatively in the same sphere. So the first is 4-hour games. This game finished at 3:50. On Saturday afternoon, just completely draining for all parties.
My phone died. People on the field. I missed the fourth quarter because my phone died.
Exactly. So less draining for the people on the field, and much more draining on us, the fans, for watching. Being at a bar for 4 hours, you know, just gets like tiring eventually. You're ready to move on, get something to eat, whatever. You're in Vermont. Your phone's going to die. You're running on data. Whatever it is, it's mentally draining. You know, the fans. We talk about bad attendance. I don't blame them for not sticking around for 4 hours against Temple. So. That's a pood for me. We got to figure out a way to get these games faster. Second one I have is these consistent noon and 12:30 kickoffs. So I got some stats for you here. 6 of our first 6 Saturday games this year will start between 12 and 1. So that's everything through Louisville, which is the latest one that's been announced. Since we graduated in 2013, we've only had 4, quote, afternoon games kickoff between 3 and 6, which is by far the fewest in the ACC. Pitt, Georgia Tech, and Louisville have 6, but everyone else has double digits. And we have 22 starts in the 12-1 window, tied with Pitt for the most. It's just brutal because there's nothing better on a Saturday than 3:30 football. We had a couple of them in school, and those are always the best days. Those are always the best Saturdays, whether it's home or away. And I don't know we have to win is the answer, but I just really want to get back to a point where noon is not the normal. And
yeah, there's a lot of politics.
Yeah,
there's a lot of politics when it comes to this. And, you know, ACC is based down south and it's hard for people to give a shit about BC. But it's also, I think there's something with 3:30 games having to be selected. That's actually not the best time to play rank wise, or that's like the low. They get the lower pick or something like that.
I don't care about that. Yeah, I care. I mean, it's more what is most convenient to tailgate or, you know, go out and watch it.
Right. And I think all this will probably change next year with the rollout of the ACC network.
Sure.
Where I think we'll start to get more favorable times. And as we get better, obviously, as you said, you know, right now when BC stinks and they're not interesting to watch, you know, they don't really have the national market like some of the Southern teams, you know, do every year. So I sort of get it from that standpoint. But as we continue to, you know, rack up the W's, I think that problem goes away.
Yeah. I mean, my big bone to pick, honestly, is with this coming weekend. It's a noon or a 12:30 start? But playing against NC State, who's now a top 23 team, combined the two records, have an 8-1 record. When the time was announced, we were in the top 25. I don't get that one whatsoever.
Who got the 3:30 game?
Vatek is a night.
Yeah, they got Notre Dame.
Florida State, Miami might be the 3:30. But there's a couple good matchups on paper, but I don't know. Overall, it is very overwhelming, and obviously, you know, I'm a little bitter because we'll actually be on the road there. But moving on from that. Due to the week, I'll let you go first because I have 2 and I feel like we'll at least share one of them.
Do you get Zach Allen?
I don't.
Well, one of us, it should be Zach. We already touched on Zach Allen.
We touched on him.
But that guy's a monster. I just can't say enough good things about him. You know, it seems like people were sort of down on it. People were on the Wyatt Ray, Sack King Cole train, which is great. And he's probably, you know, he's going to be a great player. But Zach Allen is the guy back there. And you saw what he did against, you know, someone that just couldn't handle what he does. On Saturday, and if he can keep that up, he's an absolute game changer. My dude of the week, though, and this isn't all that original either, but just want to make sure AJ Dillon's getting the love that he deserves. Between that double stiff arm, you know, he's third in the nation right now, despite sitting, you know, he was injured obviously the second half of last game. He sat out the second half of our first two games. So despite all that, he's still third in the nation in rushing. And it almost, you know, he came into the year with some unfair expectations, and he's exceeded them, in my opinion. He's made some unbelievable plays. But I want to make sure that we are appropriately, you know, appreciating what we're seeing out of Dylan, where he can rip off a 50-yard run. He can stiff arm eight people on the same play. That guy is an animal. And every time he, he's out there, he can do anything. And it's incredible to watch. So appreciate him while he's an Eagle, because it's going to go by quick.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I don't think he always gets necessarily love, especially this year. Maybe it's because the hype was so high. But so I have two, one of them in the running back position. I do want to give a shout out to Benny the Jet. Came in for AJ after he was hurt, and it was basically mid-second half. Put up 120 yards on 23 carries with a touchdown. We've been on this guy's hype train for a very long time, I feel like, because Benny the Jet's a cool nickname, and also because he's like the fastest guy in the world, looks like.
And he's a spring game hero. He always has a great spring game, and we're all like, this guy is going to break out this year.
We got to go out on a limb, so we kind of pick like a lesser known dude of the year.
And he's got a lot of tats, which a lot of BC players do not have. So it's nice to mix that up. I think the only person with tats this year is Colton Lichtenberg. So
is he tatted up?
I think so. I might be making that up.
Interesting. Well, anyways,
I think he's got one.
My second dude of the week, I'm going to keep it in the kicking position, so good segue there. Got to give a shout-out to Danny Longman. Came on for Tessitore after another mixed extra point. So made all of his kicks, which is huge, and more importantly, made the only field goal attempt of the year, which is wild that it happened in Game 5, but I'll take it. My bigger point on Longman is that is a 10 out of 10 name for a kicker if he ends up panning out.
Matt, I'm trying to remember who the kicker was for like Pitt or Georgia Tech. Blewett. Yeah.
He's basically the opposite of Blewett.
Right. Yeah.
So that's funny. I love that. So hopefully he ends up, working out. It sounds like he's at least going to keep the kickoff duties if Colton comes back, because that was apparently what sparked the injury there. So maybe special teams will look it up. Who knows?
He do kickoffs, or Colton do kickoffs?
Long man will do kickoffs because he kicks it very long, and Colton will do kicks for the time being.
But as soon as Colt misses one, we throw Danny back in there.
We go to the long man.
Got it. That's perfect. Awesome.
Yeah. So I'm here for that. All right, let's go quickly into the courtroom here. Who do you want to start with here?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. So court is officially in session here, Matt.
Thank you.
I think to kick things off, I think the logical place to start is my favorite team that I like to talk about, Syracuse.
Yep, you too.
You've got to talk about Syracuse right now. They're ranked top 28 right now, which if you said that at the beginning of the year, you'd be laughed out of the room. But they very nearly pulled off the upset against Clemson. They were a fourth
Probably
down stop.
Probably should have.
They were a fourth down stop away from beating Clemson. Granted, Clemson's QB went out with a concussion, I think. So they were playing against the backup, but it doesn't matter. That's one of the best teams in the country, obviously, and for a team like Syracuse to go down to Death Valley and almost pull that off, pretty damn impressive. Eric Dungy, that man is. I'm officially worried about that game.
You should marry Eric
Syracuse
Dungy just to get
is
ahead of that.
Guilty of probably finishing top three in the Atlantic this year.
Okay, I like it. Next on my list, Vatek. They were declared dead, or we were at least. I think we mentioned if they were declared dead last week. They're innocent of being dead. See you later, Duke. I never understood that line when Duke was like a 5-point favorite or something stupid. Obviously,
yeah,
Duke
I picked
good.
Them. That was dumb. It's because of what I said. Duke's my dark horse every year, and I'm such an idiot. But because it's I love Cutcliffe. He's a great coach, and he's he coached Peyton Manning anyway. But yeah, no, I'm with you. Duke's officially guilty of being overrated. Virginia Tech, I think, will pull off the upset this weekend. I can't explain why. It doesn't make sense on paper. Notre Dame looks very, very good. They beat a pretty good Stanford team, obviously, last Saturday night in primetime.
Well, that's a good segue, and I've been dreading this trial all year. But Notre Dame, I think, is guilty of being actually good, and I hate it, and I hate to say it because I think they were so overrated through the first five games, and they were struggling through Ball State and Vandy. They looked phenomenal. On Saturday night, Stanford just had no answer for them pretty much any point in the evening. Just really crushing, quite honestly.
Yeah, it's the absolute worst. I'll give you two more here real quick. So we got Florida State at Miami.
Yep.
What do you got?
I think Miami, I think, is really good. I would take whatever the spread is.
12.5.
Yeah, I think I would still take Miami on top of that. Florida State, I think, is still dead and buried. Miami, obviously UNC is horrible, but they looked good, I thought, on, was that Thursday night? They looked pretty good. I overall think they're a little bit overrated, but Florida State is so bad.
And they will get better, though, right? I think they have to get better.
And I wish we were playing them now rather than in, you know, whatever, 6 weeks.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. No, I think that that Miami covers easily. I don't think Miami is quite the real deal, but right now Florida State is just that bad. But by the time we play them, they'll start to figure things out probably. Last one on my list here, Clemson at Wake Forest. Wake Forest, are they officially guilty of sucking?
I think they're guilty of being really bad. Yeah, okay. I believe I wanted to be really high on them, and Notre Dame ruined that one for me as well. So I'm officially going guilty of being bad.
Got it. I'm holding out hope that maybe they have a weirdo WTF game and keep it close.
It could happen, but I'd rather that be for us.
Yeah, agreed. And obviously it sucks that we don't want Clemson Clemson kind of needs to be undefeated for the ACC to have any sort of respect, at least until we play them.
Sure. And then last one I have in the court for the day, I do want to talk about the Silence Bowl last weekend, Penn State versus Ohio State. Both guilty of being terrible programs. That's what Ohio State called it, to be fair. It just happened to be very relevant.
Just stick to sports, Matt.
Both guilty of terrible fan bases and terrible atrocities at their program. Let me just say, that play call on 4th and 5 at the end of the game there, I cannot imagine how the BC fan base would have reacted if Coach Dazio called a 4th and 5 delayed handoff with the game on the line on the 50-yard line playing a top 3 team.
Agreed.
So just a miserable fan experience for Penn State for so many reasons. I don't like Ohio State fans much, but I'm overall happy when Penn State loses in general. So I guess I'll take it. Both guilty, again, of being bad fan bases. That's all I have.
Yeah, Matt, I think we agreed down the line on that one, which is rare. But I think with that, we can officially adjourn the court.
Perfect. All right. Two quick Eagles in the Wild for me, and then let's get into NC State. Missed this one last week, so it's kind of a delayed one. Matt Milano was named the Defensive Player of the Week in the NFL for his standout play with the Buffalo Bills last Sunday. And then keeping it in the same league, Harold Landry. Huge game against Philly on Sunday. Huge strip sack against Philly in the, I don't know if it was officially an upset, but in the big win. Quickly living up to his potential in the NFL, which is obviously awesome to see, especially for the tough senior year he had. On that note, give a little shout out to Mike Vrabel, his head coach.
Dude, I was just going to say that. That was mine. I love the Titans this year. And I'm a Tennessee guy.
Everyone
knows
that.
I'm a Nashville guy. I'm a Mike Vrabel guy. I had a Mike Vrabel jersey growing up. He's my favorite guy. And we obviously have his kid on the team, right? Although he hasn't done much this year. We're going to redshirt him.
He's redshirting. But yeah, okay, parents weekend. It. So that's still a good, whatever, shout out.
Yeah. There you go. No, but that was mine, and I was going to give Joe Tess a shout out as well. Just getting back to, we have a lot of famous alums out there, and it's always great to have those guys rooting on the Eagles.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I don't know if we did a top 5 notable alumni of BC people last year, but if we didn't, we should have. Ours is really good. Our universe is much better than the rest of what the other teams give us. So
alumni, if there's an alternative, or parents, dads,
yeah, exactly.
Parents,
exactly. Any relation, right? I hear you. All right, with that, we ready to get into the Wolfpack?
Yeah, let's talk Raleigh. And this is obviously a special one because Matt and I will be there. And not just us. We also have other friends, as we keep telling you guys, whether you guys believe us or not.
I don't think it matters if we keep saying it. I don't think they believe it.
No, but we'll officially be there. This is our road trip of the year. We're really excited. It's been circled on my calendar for a long time now. So with that, I'll get into my NC State fun fact. And it's actually football related, Matt, which I know we don't technically do all that much, just because it's who we are. But in 2009, Boston College's Montel Harris, who you guys might remember, set 2 school records with 264 yards rushing and 5 touchdowns to lead the Eagles to a 52-20 win over North Carolina State on Saturday. Not a great stat on its own, right? But when you think about the quarterbacks in that game, it's Dave Shinsky outdueling Russell Wilson. 52-20 back in 2009.
Oh, let's go.
One of my favorite fun facts of all time. Shinsky, obviously a huge friend of the program.
Couple baseball players.
Yeah, absolutely, Matt. And a good friend of ours, really porous bouncer, again, for Rogies back in the day, so which made for a nice sophomore, junior year.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. I think I might have used this one last year, but I'm going to go with it anyways again. probably went to the same website, so that makes sense. So their colors in the 1800s were pink and blue at one point, and then brown and white. And on that same note, the university has had five official names since they were founded. So in general, they're very inconsistent, big flip-floppers. I don't know what that says about them or their alumni, but overall, just kind of a weird look. Also, pink and blue for a college team, I feel like would be really, for any team for that matter, would be kind of a strange setup. So overall, I think red and white is a good winner.
Matt, I don't want to rain on your parade. I think you plagiarized word for word what you had last year.
I may have just cut in the clip from an earlier episode. Whatever. I don't know. Again, there's only so many fun fact websites. Google a college, and then there are fun facts, and you're probably going to get the same website every single year in a row. So I do the best I can. Moving on into the travelability. Again, as Matt mentioned, this is a very special travelability score for us since we will be there. Got the whole Airbnb set up. Raleigh's supposed to be an awesome town. So we got a big reservation over the barbecue spots on Friday. Got a whole list of bars to get to. We got some playoff baseball to watch the weekend. It's going to be a time. Let me say that much. In terms of the actual trip itself and the score I would give it, a couple big pros in this category for me. One, it's a ranked team, top 25. It is an ACC showdown while we still are alive in the conference, which, again, over the past 10 years have been somewhat rare. It's supposedly a great tailgate scene. That's what I've heard, and I'm excited to kind of mix it up with the locals there. It's in a city, so there's stuff to do around the weekend, so that's always a big plus for me, rather than going to like Blacksburg or something where you're just kind of in the middle of nowhere and the game is all we have. I hate them as a city right now because they stole the Whalers. Everyone knows I'm a Hartford guy, so I always have some resentment, and just recently that flared up with their release of the new third jerseys, which of course are the Whalers throwbacks. The rest of the hockey world was psyched about it. Not me, not my former Hartford my Hartford brethren. So overall, very disappointed.
Are they based in Raleigh?
They are, Matt.
The Hurricanes are?
They are. The arena is literally right next to Carter Finley Stadium. So I might protest.
Really?
Yeah, I might protest while I'm down there. Bring some signs.
Very cool.
Weather report. A little in the middle right now. So it's going to be brutally hot. The feels like temperature for Mackey weather is in the mid-90s. So that's going to be tough for us in person. Possible showers, which obviously would put a damper on it, and thunder showers, which makes sense if you get those high temperatures. Overall, though, a very high score. I am super excited for this trip. I'm really glad the schedules have worked out the way it is, that we're a combined 8-1 in their top 25. I'm going 27.2 RVs. Cannot wait to get down there on Friday.
Yeah, I think you covered just about everything. I'll add a couple things that you missed. Down south, nothing better than being down south. I'm a southern guy.
Hang on, real quick, while we're here, can we get a quick power rankings of your southern states? I know you mentioned Tennessee, and I know you're a big South Carolina guy. Would just love to get your top three.
Yeah, so I'll go reverse order, Matt. Number three, I would probably go with Georgia.
Okay.
Number two, I'm going to go with Tennessee. And number one, I got to go with the home of the Gamecocks, South Carolina.
Yeah, I appreciate your loyalty. All right, keep going.
North Carolina is four. Just so you guys know, but Raleigh's cool. It's, as you said, it's a walkable, nice campus, really nice, tailgate situation. Fun fact, Matt, at halftime, similar to what we did at Army, and it's less cool now that we, alumni serves beer, but at halftime, you can leave the stadium, drink a beer, and come back inside. It's just a real treat.
So that's a challenge for us, 'cause we don't have a car. So like, we're not going to have like a tailgate, fort. We're just kind of
we'll
walk
find like a tree, or
and...
we'll find someone with a okay. We'll throw it in someone's trunk. We'll do some networking. It's gonna be great. But you're right. We're 4-1, which isn't bad. We get a chance for a huge upset. Not really a huge upset, but it's an opponent that we can beat that would bring a W would really reignite this entire fan base. And this is our last test before Miami Friday night. I don't want to look past Louisville, but whatever. We're gonna beat Louisville, right? So. With all that said, I think, this has the makings for a pretty perfect road trip. I'm going 28.4, and it's probably a little inflated because we're going, but I think that's the right number.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think nothing but positivity. Again, this would be a humongous win for the program, for the season, for these players, whatever, and for our general outlook the rest of the way. So, again, moving into the top five. Plus six man notable alumni, because this is a repeat opponent, similar to what we did for Wake Forest. Rather than people, we are kind of going for top five plus six man notable. I guess we'll call it mascots. In this case, top five plus six man notable Wolves or Wolf Packs. So we're getting a little creative with this, a little outside the box, I guess. The Wolf Pack, I feel like, is one that it actually works moderately well for. Demon Deacons was tough.
Demon Deacons was very difficult. I'm still very tentative about the whole Hokie situation that we got to deal with in a few weeks from now.
Hokies will be bad, yeah.
Wolf was pretty good, though. And I can kick it off here because I have a feeling he's on your list, too. I'm going to go with Wolf Blitzer, who is obviously a real human. I think he's one of those guys that he's on the news, right? He's CNN or one of those, right? Special consultant or not consultant, special reporter. He's everywhere. All he does is report the news. What do you say, Matt?
He's on CNN literally 24 hours a day. Like right. No matter what time you turn the channel on,
it's either him or the other guy, Sterling Shepard.
Yeah, exactly, Sterling Shepard. It's amazing. So I don't think he sleeps, or there's like seven of them at CNN headquarters. Matt, good job. I'm really proud of you when you do the Wolf piece well, because I think you're always nervous that you're not going to have good answers, but don't sell yourself short.
I've been very, whatever the word is about this whole Wolf mascot thing.
Sure.
But that came together pretty nicely. I got one more Wolf Blitzer fun fact for you before we keep going here.
Let's hear it.
In September, back in about 10 years ago, September 17, 2009, Wolf Blitzer competed on an episode of Celebrity Jeopardy. And he finished with negative 4,600.
That's tough.
Which was shocking to me because you figure he's a smart guy up on current events and all that.
Yeah, I would have thought so too. All right, well, I'll go for my top two. First one for me with the second overall pick is pretty obvious. Going to go with the Hartford Wolfpack. Obviously, we talked about the Whalers. Once they left town, the Hartford Wolfpack came in as the AHL affiliate to bring minor league hockey back to the insurance capital of the world, the Rangers affiliate. So, you know, always a good time. You get out. It's, you know, they, I think on like one of the Thursday nights or something, it's like $1 hot dog and $3 beer. So just a good time, you know, in the capital city. Third pick, the Wolfpack from The Hangover. So the fellows, Doug, Stu, Alan, and Phil. One of my favorite comedies of all time. It's on the HBO syndicate right now, so always gets a decent amount of play. They are the Wolfpack running in the desert for, was it Strippers and Cocaine, I believe?
Yes, that is okay. Correct.
So they're my third overall pick.
Very good, Matt. I'm going to go with my fourth pick here. I'm going to go with Werewolves of London, which
ooh,
is just an absolute dynamite song by...
If you asked me this 5 minutes ago, I would have had it. Just one of these off the top. I'm going to...
It's not Steppenwolf, is it?
No, it's not Steppenwolf.
Are you sure?
No, I'm positive. It's a guy's name. Warren Zevon.
No, Zevon. That's not the good version.
Yes, it is.
Really?
Yeah.
It was called something else on my iTunes. But anyway, just an absolute dynamic, electric, every adjective in the book song. Just nothing bad to say there. That's a really good one for me, Matt.
Yeah, that's great. I'm proud of you there again.
I have another real person, too. Josh Wolf, who was a member of the U.S. national team, MLS All-Star. You're a soccer guy. Do you know him? He was pretty big, maybe before your time.
The name is very familiar, yes.
The reason that he's, you know, I'm picking him, it's not just some rando. He was a South Carolina Gamecock, speak of the devil. And get this, Matt, he played back in the 1997-98 era. And little Matty used to go watch him on a regular basis play Gamecock soccer during my time in Columbia.
Nice. That's just bringing back good memories of a Southern upbringing. I love it.
That's right. Y'all.
The sixth overall pick and final pick here, I'm going to go with the former NHL hockey player turned Iceland head coach, Wolf Stanson, a.k.a. the dentist. So kind of a villain.
Oh,
but,
wow. Yeah,
it's a pretty good one, huh?
Man, that was right in front of me.
Yeah, yep. So pretty good hockey player. Definitely a villain, but, you know, again, he was a phenomenal coach. Obviously led a really good program for a long time. So have to give him some love here.
He owes Coach Bombay a beach ball.
He does. I don't know if he ever paid that one back yet. Couple honorable mentions for me. The Boy Who Cried Wolf, great fable. The Gray with Liam Neeson, really good movie about him kind of evading a wolf pack, I believe in Canada, but maybe Alaska. And then any of the episodes or scenes involving wolves in the Planet Earth or not North America documentary series. I'm a huge fan of those. Get them in HD. It's just an awesome time. The wolf scenes are some of my favorites. Also love anything with bears or any of the big cats, anything in the Africa space with lions and things like that are always
yeah, a little emo there. It gets pretty violent there, man. I'm like a penguin guy, and you watch those guys go, and it's...
Oh, it's nothing like just watching a group of wolves hunt. Tell you what,
I have a couple as well. They're literary, and I know we can't spend a lot of time here, so I'll go through them quickly. The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. Obviously, there is no wolf in there, but... But no, it came up on the search because the wolf is the chief of the White Witch's secret police. Read that book, but that's what I have there. Glad I didn't have to use that. And then obviously, spoiler alert, Professor Lupin is a werewolf in Harry Potter.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we don't play any lions this year, unfortunately, because otherwise I would say you could save that. But okay. All right. So we only have about 10 minutes left here, which is, I don't think we did the best time budgeting our time this episode. But
too many wolves.
Too many wolves. It's hard. I don't know what we're supposed to do. So let's talk NC State. This is going to be, in my opinion, the toughest opponent we've played so far by a considerable margin. Starting up front, Ryan Finley. One of the best quarterbacks in the country. He's the top QB on the draft board for 2019. Currently averaging 328 yards per game with a nice 69% completion percentage. And on the other side of him, he's just got phenomenal receivers. So even when he plays poorly, like I think he had a bad half to start against UVA last week, they bail him out. They make plays. They get open. They allow for easy throws. So offensively, they're an aerial attack, and I'm not looking forward to seeing that on Saturday.
Yeah, but guess whose number we always have every single year?
Hampshire's Accords to break up the aerial attacks from the opposition. Is that what you're going to get at?
Yeah, something like that.
Okay.
I mean, Finley versus BC, historically, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we at least had a couple picks against them in 2016, which, by the way, and we love Patty Tolles and we love that 2016 team. That 2016 team was not our best, and we beat NC State. We always beat these guys no matter what, but specific to Finley, you know, that was a pretty good NC State team. They had Finley, they had Nyheim Himes, they had, you know, guys playing the NFL right now, right? And Jalen Samuels, I think, was there then as well. 2017, the only reason they beat us was, you know, because we had Darius Wade playing, but we still held Finley to, I think, 100 and something yards. I mean, something ridiculous.
Yeah,
like
he had
that.
His worst game of the year, pretty much, right?
So it's something about BC, and it's always been the fact, you know, NC State never plays BC well, and it's not even a Dave Doran thing. It's going all the way back to Tom O'Brien and beyond. Especially, we always beat them at home, you know, when they're hosting us, right? So for all those reasons, Matt, I'll get into my prediction later, but I can't, as good as their offense is, we always defend them well. So this might be a well-timed game for our defense to wake up a little bit, start to figure it out. We know they got talent back there. You know, our secondary, I think, is you know, good enough to play with anyone in the country. And as long as we can stop the run game, I think we have a serious shot to, you know, hold them to the typical 17, 21 points that we've been holding to since the last 10 years or something.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, again, on a positive note, as good as their passing game is, that's kind of their you know, biggest strength by a mile. Their run game is pretty weak, 12th in the ACC right now. And their line in general has looked really good in pass protection, but very poor on the run side of things. So they've only allowed 2 sacks for Finley this year, but again, leading a pretty weak rushing attack there. So, you know, certainly some different schemes. Defensively, they're solid. They don't really have any huge weaknesses. They protect the ball, again, going back to Finley.
They haven't played anyone yet, man.
Yes, so that's my other note. They have not played anyone quality yet. It almost is a little bit, and they're ranked 23 right now too, so it's how we were after Wake Forest. It reminds me a little bit of us after Wake Forest, where we had, you know, played one ACC game, looked good, but the other 2 games we took absolutely nothing from. That's kind of where they are right now. They played Marshall, James Madison, and I think, did they play Old Dominion as well? Is that their 4th game in addition to UVA? So whatever, no one big. West Virginia was supposed to be their big game, but that obviously got hurricaned out. So we don't really know what to expect out of them. I think for that reason, the line is you know, floating around 4 points right now because it's a little bit of a variable. But I mean, look, they're a solid team on both sides of the ball. They don't make many mistakes. So, you know, that's going to be our key is can we find a way to get pressure? Again, their lines look good. The Sack brothers, Zach Allen and Zach Kinkole, have been red hot, so they need to make Finley uncomfortable for the first time this year, cause some interceptions, cause some turnovers, cause some pressure, whatever it might be. But if we let him be comfortable, I think he will pick apart our secondary as good as they've looked. So that's, for me, the big key. Can we get pressure? I think we'll all go as the pressure goes.
I'm not nearly as high on their defense. I don't think they're mediocre. They got absolutely gutted with the draft. They were outstanding last year. Bradley Chubb terrorized us last year. I think he had 2.5 sacks.
Yep.
But there's a ton of new faces on the line, on the linebackers and in the secondary. I think 6 or 7 of those guys got drafted on not on defense alone, but a lot of them were on the defensive side. I think actually 3 of the D linemen are playing the NFL right now. So, you know, I think they did have some depth and they got some guys in there. But either way, there's a ton of new faces, not a lot of playing time, you know, between all of them. And, you know, I think that our offense has an opportunity to do some damage on these guys. It's something about playing NC State, and Dave Doran does not strike me as a guy that is all that great of a coach. I think they overachieved last year to win 9 games. You know, obviously they, you know, were hoping to win more, but I think that's their ceiling, right? I don't think they're a better team than 9-4, and they're getting, you know, they're starting to get some of the hype that they do every year, which is always unfounded. But this does not strike me as a team that I put in the top 5 of likely teams that we're going to lose to. It's a must win for us, and I think our guys are motivated after you know, maybe not showing up, you know, as much as they usually do for the past few games. For all those reasons, I like us, our offense, to finally wake up. I think our defense can handle these guys. I think, you know what, Lucas is back. Again, he's going to want to prove himself. Zach Allen can absolutely play with the you know, line that lost some guys from last year, and they lost some good receivers from last year. So my point being, I think that this is not the NC State team that it was last year. We almost beat them last year with a backup quarterback, and if we didn't throw some picks, we probably would have. So if this is a game where BC finally wakes up and we see the real BC that we've been hoping for all summer long, you know, I think it would make a lot of sense for us to really, you know, time that this game.
Let's get the prediction. Yeah, let's get the prediction.
All right. Official prediction here, and it's going to be a little wonky here, just because that's how BC plays. I got 31-27 and a nail biter. These games never go, you know, spread more than 3 or 4 points. It will be a 1-possession game, whoever has the ball last. I got BC getting the ball last, and I got BC getting out of Raleigh with a W.
I love it. A couple things I'm watching for. So, again, like I said, 23rd-ranked team. There's a curse of the 23rd-ranked team, as we all know so far this year. They've lost in 4 out of 5 weeks. The team that's been ranked 23rd, obviously Boston College, unfortunately being one of them. If we avoid the big plays, so they're first in ACC in completions of 10 and 20-plus yard plays, that's something we have to avoid. Again, that all kind of speaks to the time you give Finley and his good receivers. The other key for me is we need to get off the field. Too often the last couple of weeks, we've been giving up big third and in some cases fourth down plays of, you know, 10-plus yards. We got to get off the field when we can, especially in this heat. We saw what the heat did to our guys, you know, down in Winston-Salem. They're going to be gassed, so we got to, you know, make sure we're controlling the tempo where we can and keeping our offense on the field where we can to give our, you know, defense a breather so that Finley just doesn't torch us in the second half. To be completely honest, I don't have a great feeling about this game. This is by far the most negative I've felt about a game in this season so far. Finley is just an absolute monster. I don't have a ton of trust in our defense in the grand scheme of things, but again, I will say on the positive side of it, if we get pressure, that's kind of all our secondary needs to go to work. If we get pressure, that forces a couple bad throws. And if you make a couple bad throws, they can take advantage. If you give them all day, like any secondary, I mean, there's no one who can stop it if you just give them all day. So that's kind of where it's all going to go there. You know, I think overall with, and as I kind of touched on earlier, if we avoid these big mistakes, if we have a clean game.
Clean special teams.
Clean special teams, right? That might be the X factor. Let's just not give away 15 points. If we don't give away 15 points, and if we don't give away 15 points to Wake and Temple, we feel so much different about this team right now, despite the same record, despite everything else. So I'm thinking that if we can just keep this game clean, if we can limit mistakes, again, primarily on special teams, maybe get 1 or 2 breaks to go our way. As nervous as I am about this game, I'm saying we find a way to win 44-38. I don't know how I get to those numbers. There's a lot of missed extra points in there. Shout out to Longman. I feel like I can't predict a loss just yet because they haven't shown me enough bad things. But just know that this is my lowest confidence score I've ever had in a 6-point win.
I want to caveat mine that Dylan is healthy.
Dylan is, yeah.
At least one of Kobe White and Jeff Smith are healthy. Healthy being 100%.
We're in big trouble. Trouble if that's not the case.
Yeah, and I'll give you my official prediction I'm actually not going to do that.
Don't do it.
Dylan will be good. He'll be there. He'll power through. Matt, how can you predict? I don't know. We're going to be there. I think that
I predicted a win.
I know, but you're bringing a lot of negative energy right now. So
I'm just bringing a lot of cautious optimism. That's all.
Mine's a 31-27 win, but it's like handily. It's not like it's not
it's
really
a blowout, a real 4-point blowout.
We're never going to lose this game. We're not sure. We're only going to win by 4 points.
Okay. All right. Any closing thoughts for you?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Obviously, we're going to Raleigh, and it would be heck of a Saturday if we get out of there with a win, 5-1, would be a nice step forward in the road to 14-1. And yeah, let's go down there and let's take care of business.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm really excited to finally see this team in person. Look, the ACC is clearly in a down year. This could be a huge opportunity for us to rip off a special year, get back to Charlotte, win some big games. But I think this is a critical game to do so, obviously. Officially, the 4th and Dude road trips are 1-0 since we started the podcast. We did UVA. Half of us did UVA last year, but we had a big group trip. Podcast was in full swing at that point. Can't think of a better time to keep this streak alive than this weekend. Let's get to 2-0. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter for plenty of content throughout our time down there at 4th and Dude. And Matt, the road to 14-1 keeps rolling along.
It's always a great day to be a dude.
Wondered how to say good morning in Italian, or what is goodbye in French? You can ask Alexa. Just say, what is happy birthday in German? Or how do you say hello in Japanese? Do you want to know how to say I love you in Spanish? Ask Alexa and start learning a new language today.